Welcome to the fourth Supercoach Coach preseason podcast of 2013 season. I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, Marcus. I'm glad to be here, mate. I'm looking forward to tonight's podcast.
Yeah, we're going to talk defenders this show, Mark, and then hopefully we get through positionally for the remainder of the podcast for the preseason. A bit similar to what we did last year. We're going to try and be doing as many podcasts as we can before the season starts. So we'll start off with defense this week, Mark. Brendan Goddard is probably the one to start on.
Yeah, I could not be more excited about having BJ playing for my team, mate. BJ's every weekend for me. He averaged 101 last year, which I think is a bit down on what I'd expect for this year. He's going to play a lot more midfield time for the Bombers. A lot depends on how the Bombers go. So if the Bombers have a good season, then I think Goddard will as well. But I think at his price, you just have to lock him in considering his pedigree and where he's playing. And yeah, I think pretty much every team will have Goddard as their first defender. And it's exciting to have a Bomber. It's one of my super premiums.
Bryce Gibbs from Carlton Football Club. Been playing actually in the NAB Cup on ball a lot more, so that gives a lot more confidence going into the season proper. Is he another one of those set and forget guys along with Goddard? Has he reached that stage in terms of confidence and what Mick Malthouse will actually do with him?
I think so, mate. He did have a bit of a down season last year, averaging only 95. So again, he's probably a bit underpriced considering, I mean, he's a number one draft pick. He's missed one game in 6 years since he started. And Mick Malthouse seems to be pushing him up the ground a little bit where he will be utilised a bit better. Yeah, I think that he's definitely a lock in your defence and should provide heaps of value this year.
And I guess it's pretty unfortunate because it looks like both these blokes won't be available next year, I think.
I think that's actually exciting, mate, because as much as I like being able to lock both these guys into my team in the back line and get heaps of points, I think pretty much everyone's going to do that. And there's plenty of other defenders that I'd actually like to pick and take a punt on, but I don't really have the spots to do it because I've got two spots taken up from Goddard and Gibbs.
And Delidio's moved on as well, so it'll be good to see Goddard, Gibbs, Delidio not dominating back lines anymore.
Yeah, it will be.
So next player we're going to look at is someone who really broke out last season, and I didn't get on him, Mark. I don't think you did either, Bo Waters. And it sort of burnt us throughout the season, and he kept performing, even though I expected him to drop off a lot. So I guess the main concern with him is just the ability to stay on park. But last year, he did manage to do that. I think he only missed a couple. Is that right, Mark?
Three games missed last year, mate.
Yeah.
Boosted his average to 100. I know that there were a lot of fantasy coaches out there on him. Watching him was really frustrating not having him because there was a few games where he was on about 70 with 3 minutes to go in the game and still managed to get over 100 and took a really important contested mark or something. And with West Coast improving, he definitely could be in a good pick and even improve his average again this year, I think.
Problem with picking, you know, premium defenders generally is they'll start to get some sort of tag on them and struggle with that. But the fortunate thing about Waters is that he's got Hearn, which is severely damaging that oppositions tend to tag. And Waters plays generally a more loose role, picking up a lot of intercept marks and just getting a little away with a little bit more because a lot of the attention's on Hearn, rightly so, with his massive kick.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's definitely something to consider with in terms of his consistency, because that was annoying to watch last year. He just backed it up week after week.
He's had a bit of an interrupted preseason with a hip, but you never know whether that actually affects him with Waters, because you see him walk out onto the ground and he's just bandaged all over. He may as well have a mummy wrap around him, because he does always seem to be injured, but seems to play through it quite well a lot of the time. So the one thing that would concern me with him is that he's probably fully priced, maybe a little bit of value in him, but compared to Goddard and Gibbs, certainly I don't see quite as much upside in Waters. Next player we should look at is another player that could be fully priced here, and that's Heath Shaw. He's priced at 541, so the most expensive defender outside of Goddard. If the Pies rise up the ladder again this year, which there's a good chance they could be a top two team. They do have a lot of options coming out of halfback now, so maybe Shaw might not get quite as much of the attention as he has in the past, and he might even play up the ground a little bit for some of the games. So he does have a big upside, Shaw, and he could go on a run and average 120 over a short period of time. The main concern with Shaw is that he'll do something stupid and miss games as a result, because he hasn't played 22 since 2007, and 2007 he did average 106 and play 22, and that's definitely still within him. He could definitely produce a season like that, and if he did, he'd turn out to be a really good pick.
Grant Birchall's the next player on the agenda, Mark, and he's a player that I really, really like. I know, picked him last year, and that was the first time I had him in my team, and boy, is it good to watch him kick off that left boot of his. Very consistent player. Well, he seems a safer pick, at least, than the likes of Waters and Shaw.
Yeah, he's probably a little bit more durable or more likely to play 22 than those guys. He doesn't have quite the ceiling, or hasn't in the past, highest average of 95 before. He might be... The Hawks' back line is really interesting this year because they have brought in Lake. There's talk of Ruffy playing a bit of time back there. We saw that in the first round of the NAB. They've got players like Spanger and plenty of young defenders coming through. So you might actually see Birchall released a little bit more this year. So I think he actually does have some upside and he could average up to 100. Personally, at the moment, I don't have a lot of Hawks in my team because they do have a very tough start to the year. But as a defender, he might actually benefit from the tough start. And I think he's a pretty solid pick. He hasn't been in any of my teams, though, yet.
Moving down from 7 to 6 as well, you're looking at a lot less premium defenders. Yeah, a lot of guys that you're thinking about slotting into your team but can't quite find the room, with Goddard and Gibbs already taking up a couple of premium spots.
Yeah, so the next player we're going to look at is probably one of your favorites, Marcus. We've both had him in our teams a lot in the past, and that's Corey Enright.
Yeah.
How do you see him going this year? Because he is getting on in years. You won't like it, but the Cats maybe not being quite so successful this year, and maybe there's a few other defensive rebounding options for the Cats, like your man Barco.
It's, I think, a bit too tough to be picking a 31-year-old in a side like Geelong, as much as I love Geelong and I'm going to champion them doing well in season 2013. I still think that's a really, really risky move. Just
better options available, which we'll discuss today.
Yeah, unfortunately, the drop-off is somewhere around the corner, and you just don't want to be stuck with a player when he's dropping off, because you're really stuck between a rock and a hard place when that happens. When you have a premium that's underperforming, like, do I actually trade him out, or do I not? I hate getting stuck in those situations. So I think with Enright, there's more to say not to pick him than to pick him. And that really hurts to say because I love Enright. But if he continues to perform throughout the season, then I'll slot him into my team. But yeah, you're right, Mark. We were also having a lot of young defenders going to come through our back line, and they'll probably take less defensive responsibility and more of the rebounding off the halfback. So Enright will continue getting his points from intercept marks and the like, but with Varko moving down there and such, a lot of rebounding might actually go through the hands of some quicker players.
So the next player we're going to look at is Paul Duffield. Now, I just want to go over his stats from the end of last year, mate. From round 17, 85, 113, 96, 134, 139, 114, 116, and then 102 and 93 in the finals. It seemed like he really hit his straps late in the year after maybe struggling early on under Ross Lyon and having a few poor games in the middle of the year. So it's possible that he's actually a bit underpriced, and he has been a bit inconsistent in the past, but he's looked really good in the NAB so far. And if Fremantle do rise, we have seen Ross Lyon rebounding defenders score quite well. And Duffield looks like he could do really, really well this year and lift his average up to 100 or so.
I think the main thing that was good to see from a Supercoach point of view was that, you know, those increased scores did come a lot from increased kicking efficiency, which has always been a knock on Duffield. He can get at the disposals, but sometimes he just really won't register any points with them. So it was good to see that. I think it's hard to pick a player that's inconsistent like he is, because it's not inconsistent over a season, it's inconsistent over a career. So they could be looking good in the preseason, and then when the things start proper, you know, he gets himself found in the waffle a fair amount throughout his career.
Yeah, so, I think it's possible that he's turned the corner with that, and that he might be become one of Ross Lyon's favourites and get over that sort of getting dropped part anyway. But I think that he has potential to put in some really a big patch of some really good games like he did at the end of last year. And if he did that at the start of the season, then you'd really be left behind if you didn't have him. But then he might put in 3 low scores in a row early in the year and provide a bit of value as a trade-in target.
Yeah, and I guess that's just the general thing. Like, even if he has cemented himself into best 22, it sort of feels like if he's held that sort of attitude throughout his career, that you're still a bit worried that the next week, if he's had a bit of a down week at training, he might not deliver as well as another player who's had just a, you know, steely mindset. But having said that, you're right, Mark. There's a lot of value to be had, and especially if, you know, we see they did perform well in the finals last year. If Fremantle continue to grow as a team under Ross Lyon, there's definitely going to be points coming out of that back line, and you'd think, at the moment at least, that Duffield's the number one candidate for that. So next player we're going to look at is from Port Adelaide. Mark got a lot of attention at the start of the preseason, but petered off a little bit. Hamish Hartlett from Port Adelaide, available both as a midfielder and a defender. I guess consistency is, again, a big issue with Hartlett, but he plays mostly midfield time and available in the back line, which we always love.
Yeah, another player that you wouldn't think would be available as a backman next year, but he does do some rebounding off defence, so he still might be. Coming into his fifth season, huge raps on this guy as a ball winner. Highest average of 91 in the past. You could easily see him going up and averaging over 100 and being Port's highest scorer for the year. I do think that there would be some chance that he would cop the tag at Port this year with Daniel Pearce moving to Fremantle, and I think that might make him a little bit more inconsistent, but in the games that he does get away, he has shown the potential to score about 150, and he could do that a few times in a row or against some weaker teams. And Port do have a pretty good draw this year after their abysmal season last year, so definitely one that I think a lot of people have in their teams. I think the main knock on him would be durability, really, because he's never played more than 16 in a season.
Do you feel, Mark, it's a bit like last season where we might be overthinking things a little bit because of the number of options and the amount of spots we have in the back line? But Deal Sidebottom and Patrick Dangerfield, they were just midfielders available out of position just because of the sheer number of options we have, like Goddard and Gibbs as well, that he might be overlooked when the simplest thing to do might just to be lock him away because he's a real big talent and he's available in the back line despite playing in midfield.
There definitely could be some validity to what you're saying there, Marcus. I think that the difference, one of the major differences might be that Sidebottom and Dangerfield played for top four teams. So, and I think that makes a huge difference on the highest scoring player from that team. And if Hartlett's going to be the highest scoring player from Port, it's not going to be in the 120 average. It's probably going to be closer to 100. But
that was a good point to bring up, Mark. Were there even any players that averaged 100 for Port last year?
I think 97 might have been the highest, mate.
Yeah, and that's probably the biggest issue. But, you know, if you expect Ken Hinckley to shake things around, and what did they have, Mark? The awesome seven or something? Then you might have a bit more confidence in Hartlett. Pierce Hanley, Mark's the next one we're going to talk about from Brisbane Lions. Last year really was a breakout season in terms of being recognised in the AFL, at least in my point of view, but probably didn't consolidate Supercoach-wise like some people would have hoped. I know he was quite a hot pick last year. How do you see him this year? Will he finally break out to the true premium status?
There is talk of him playing a little bit more midfield time this year. He does have a bit of a high ceiling, score of 151 last year. Went on a couple of really nice runs last year, but then also had some downgrade games where he's scoring 50s and 40s, and he probably had six or seven of those, maybe a bit more lockdown roles in those games, and scored a lot better in Brisbane wins. I think there's a lot of talk that Brisbane are going to win more games this year. They do have a good early draw. So from that respect, he could turn out to be quite a good pick. And it's the sort of player that almost scores enough in those wins that it sort of counteracts the low scores that he does get. So I'd like to see him a little bit cheaper to be picking him in my team. And there is just a lot of other options available. But definitely seems like a pretty good pick, especially with Brisbane's early draw.
The kick for an Irishman is just brilliant and great to watch. So he's one of those players that I just enjoy watching more than anything else. So that'd be a small factor into it as well. One player that I don't enjoy watching at all because I've been burnt time after time is Jack Grimes, Mark. How do you feel about him now? You can still stomach saying his name or a bit over him by now?
I think last year on the podcast, I ranted about Grimes quite a lot.
Yeah.
He ended up averaging 88, which is not terrible considering I got him at a discount. I did bring him in the middle of the year, though, and as soon as I brought him in, he just turned to crap and was posting 50s and 40s and 60s. But then by the end of the year, he totally redeemed himself. He had five out of the last seven games, he scored over 100, including 138. He played mainly midfield time. I know he has had a few niggles before Christmas. There was no particular injury. He had a lot of different little injuries, and that's definitely a concern. about Grimes, but he was definitely in my early teams that I picked. He hasn't been in my recent teams, but I'm actually a big fan of Jack Grimes. I think he could be maybe second top scorer for Melbourne behind Nathan Jones, maybe even the top playing through the midfield. Vice captain, plenty to prove. Probably, again, like Hartlett, doesn't have quite the ceiling because of the team that he plays in. But Jack Grimes did redeem himself in my eyes last year, and he can be a bit frustrating, and sometimes his kicking can be a bit average, but he's quite a good player to have on your team because he's so hard at it, and I do actually like him as a player. Next player we want to look at is Alex Rance from the Tigers. Now, he also can sometimes get some big roles, but then they've got Dylan Grimes, they've got Chaplin. They've got a few key defenders now, so they might be able to free Rance up as that third tall. Played some ripping games last year, both from a defensive and an offensive perspective. His kicking definitely can be a worry, and I know Richmond supporters sort of have their heart in their mouth when he gets the ball coming out of the back line, but also showed that he can post some good scores, and if Richmond improve, there might be a few more points for him this year.
Yeah, I think the addition of Chaplin will be great for Rance. Definitely value at his price point. You know, you can probably see another 10 points per game as a fair possibility. And I think,
yeah, he had a few down games last year, maybe five games where he scored 50 or below, but most of the other games were really consistent 90 pluses. So yeah, there is a bit of a point per game improvement potential in Rance, I think.
Now, a player that we've already talked about on this podcast this preseason, Mark, Jack Watts. Is he a candidate stacked up against all of these boys that we've talked about, considering we've got six spots on our field?
I think that's a really good way of putting the question, because I'm a big fan of Jack Watts this year. I think just if you even look at his scoring progression, he went 26, 53, 75, 85 as averages in the last 4 years. So if he could clearly add another 10 to it this year. And in the first week of the NAB, he kicked a goal in each of the games playing off half-back. I'm not sure that he'll get tagged too much playing off half-back. They might try and put someone on him, but he'll sort of be that third tall player, so he's a little bit harder to put someone on. Again, playing for Melbourne, whether the scores are there, but I'm expecting a big year from Jack Watts, and I think that, yeah, definitely. I'm sort of looking at next year, he should definitely be available as a defender, and he would be in my 2014 squad already, but whether he's quite good enough to compete against the other guys we've been talking about so far, and at 460, maybe not. If he was priced at about 420, that'd be a much better chance he'd come into my team, and I'd take a punt on him.
Well, the next player we're going to talk about, probably a no-brainer for you, I guess. Tyson Heppel. I guess it's
We've heard you firm up when you talk about the Geelong players, but Dyson's about as good as they come for me, mate. My son, he's only 8 months old, but his first word was Heppel. we're big fans in this household. My wife doesn't even go for the Bombers, and she's a big fan. Switching some of the intra-club footage and just the way he moves across the ground, and he was completely dominating those games. To be honest, even if Hartlett or someone like that looked like a better pick, I'd still pick Apple. So maybe my opinion's not overly useful on this one, because he'll be playing as almost mainly as a midfielder this year. Heaps of improvement in him. He's been best young player in the game 2 years in a row. So yeah, I'm very happy with Dyson Heppel in my team, and to have two Bombers in my back line is getting me a bit excited.
I guess, Mark, it must be even harder for you to pick defenders if you've locked away Apple as well.
Yeah, and that is a problem for sure.
Yeah, I think we've talked about Heppel a fair bit by now throughout the first four podcasts. Like you said,
did you say Brownlow?
Like you said, Mark, he's actually going to be playing mostly midfield this year, and that's where the attractiveness comes, is that he's a massive talent entering his third year. Will play mostly in the midfield, and therefore, you know, you have to look at him. And we talked side bottom, Dangerfield earlier. You can draw comparisons to the pick that Heppel is. I think he's more primed than those two to step out of his shell and in terms of career progression and scoring a bit faster than probably side bottom and Dangerfield, I think, with a fourth, fifth season type things. I think Heppel could easily stand up this season and average 100. Chris Newman from the Richmond Tigers. I think we have talked about him in a previous podcast as well. Main thing was getting a bit more time on the wing, Mark. Did that come through again in the second round of NAB Cup, do you know?
Yeah, he's definitely, unfortunately, I didn't get to watch a lot of the Richmond Essendon game, but I did get to see some of it. Newman's kicking ability, the fact that he's priced at like 412 or something, is awesome. He was subbed off in the game against the Bombers, but he did start on the wing. I don't think you'd take too much. You'd read too much into that. He's just like former captain, a little bit older, just easing him through the preseason. So I wouldn't be worried about that. He's definitely been in my side quite a lot this preseason. And whether he has the ceiling of over 100 is probably a little bit to be questioned. If Richmond do improve, he will definitely improve his average, I think. I don't think you'll see the 15s from him that we've seen in the past when he's had the lockdown roles in the back line or been tagged back there. I just don't see that happening off the wing. So I think value is one of the reasons why I think he's such a good pick this year, more than some of the $500,000 price defenders. If you're looking to save a bit of money and looking for someone that's going to improve, I think Newman presents that. Next player we want to look at got traded to the Suns over summer. He's burnt us in the past as well, but we've also had a lot of success with him, and that's Greg Broughton. Thoughts on him as a pick this year, playing for the Suns? The ball will probably be down their back line a bit more than it was for Freo, and what do you think about that?
Yeah, I know, you know, last year, Mark, the expansion team with the second year Blues, it's pretty much a scrap heap in terms of being able to select anyone for fantasy apart from Gazza. So I wonder whether that sort of holds in the third year or whether we can finally start looking at blokes from Gold Coast again. I'm just not sure Gold Coast will be able to win enough games for Broughton to be able to score well. I guess it's the same issue when you're looking at, you know, players from Melbourne or Port Adelaide. So that's the main issue with Broughton, but we've seen that his ability to rack up the ball is fairly magnetic. Last year was put in spots that just...
He was a forward defensive tagger last year at times under Ross Lyon. Ross Lyon just... And I think through the first half of the year, he had the lowest time on ground for any Freo player.
Exactly.
That wasn't the sub. Like, he really didn't seem like he was treated well by Lyon last year. And I guess that's why Lyon traded him out. And that does show that there's some room for improvement in Greg Broughton's role this year.
How do you think he'll be played in the Suns? You'd almost prefer him playing in the back line than playing in the midfield for Gold Coast, wouldn't you?
No, that's not how I say it at all, actually. I think that Broughton's big run of scores in the past where we all thought, oh, geez, this guy can do it and let's get this guy into our teams, was when he was playing in the midfield for Fremantle. And that is where he scores his best points in the past. So I see him very much as being the rebounding defender for Gold Coast this year and maybe releasing Harbrow a bit more into the midfield. To me, that probably puts a bit of a ceiling on his scoring. I think that if he was going to be playing pure midfield or mainly as a midfield even, that would mean that he'd have a high potential average. Although he could probably do well playing off the half-back line and get plenty of the ball, I think that Gold Coast not winning enough games means that his probably scoring potential back there is a little bit limited.
Mm. I think that's a great point you bring up about him in the back line. It's probably why I won't go close to him either, but I just think if he actually does end up playing midfield time, all I'd point to is Riscatelli's a great player, you know, won a BNF and was playing good football for the Suns. And the problem is, you know, you're no longer the third, fourth midfielder. And Broughton, you know, at his best is probably, you know, a fourth midfielder type player. Being in a midfield that has much, much less experience, you're going to get found out a lot more and struggle to score a lot more because Riscatelli's played solid football and is a great player. And probably a stronger midfield than Broughton, but I think he only averaged, you know, 100 throughout the season. I think that was his best playing for the Suns. So,
yeah, 98 on two occasions.
Yeah, so it's a bit hard to pick. I think it'd be harder to pick Broughton than if he was playing midfield, but equally in the back line, not too much a fan of that pick either.
Brings us to Sean Attlee from North Melbourne. Now, he's been in a lot of teams that I've seen on the public forums, priced at 380,000, playing for North. It's in his third year. Talk of a lot more midfield time this year. I think that's the reason why people are picking him. But just going through his scores from last year, and I just kind of can't see it. I think he averaged 71 last year. I could see him improving, and there does seem to be a bit of value there, but I'm just not sure he has the ceiling to be a premium defender.
As well as that, they have way too many players on the verge of breakout. Like, it sort of feels like if you're picking one of them, I guess kind of throwing a dart at a wall and hoping it sticks on the right player. We've got Zeeble, they got Cunnington, Bastanac. They've got a lot of young talent that have been all emerging or getting games at the same time. And I know we've talked about this in the past in terms of the Ruse being able to hopefully jump up the ladder big time last year. And they did that to some extent in terms of being able to string together strong football that just we did not expect. I think they'll continue with that this year, like you mentioned earlier in the podcast, Mark, that like Richmond, a big candidate for improving. But in terms of actually being able to pick a player with confidence that are going to break out, I just struggle with it because they have just that many candidates.
Next player we want to talk about is Chris Yaren. We'll just go over him briefly because we did spend a lot of time on him in an earlier podcast. I think he's priced at 362. Is he going to be able to jump up enough to be a premium this year, do you think?
I'll take the punt on that happening. He's an absolute talent. And the biggest factor probably for me is that I put a fair heavy knock on him as a selection after his turf toe mark. And while that was okay for a little while, he did come back and really did prove me wrong to an extent with the scores that he was able to rack up.
Okay, so I think the next thing we should do, probably rank our best five defenders or the five people that we think are the best picks for this year. Now, I presume we're both going to have Goddard and Gibbs at 1 and 2.
Is this is this top five in terms of scoring or top five in terms of selection?
Value and pick, yeah. Who do you think the best five picks are? So if we go Goddard and Gibbs as 1 and 2, I think in no particular order, 3, 4, and 5 for me would be Duffield. I just think he has a high ceiling. It's a little bit high price for me, but I do want to get a few Freo players into my team if I can, just because I do see a bit of improvement in them this year. Next one would be Dyson, my man Dyson, obviously. Just love the hair. And the next player, it's a bit of a toss-up here, but I'd probably go with Hartlett, just because his scoring ceiling seems to be a little bit higher than maybe some of the other picks available. After Goddard and Gibbs, who do you reckon your three picks would be at this stage? There's still a few weeks to go.
Probably pretty simple for me. I think I like the value Yaren shows. I'm always talking about the value, so I've got to go for the cheapest way we've talked about. Probably the two that getting midfield time the most, so Hartlett and Heppel for mine. And those would be the three that I'm watching the keenest for the remainder of the preseason. And if they don't quite perform or they don't quite look to deliver on promises like they should, then I'll look at more the blue chip type players like Birchall, maybe Waters. But for now, I think those three are probably high on my radar in terms of value players.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good approach, Marcus, that we'll talk about even more over the next few podcasts. Is there's plenty of opportunity to pick people that you think are going to improve this year. And there's plenty of defenders that look like they've got maybe 10 points of improvement in them, which means that you're getting value for money. And it's not really a game about just picking who you think is going to score the most. It's adding the value into your decisions as well, because it is a trading game.
All right. I think that's a wrap for this show, Mark. Next one will be on, we'll move to the midfield.
I think we'll probably just move down the field, mate. So we'll go midfield, then probably rucks and forwards, but rucks again this year, even though one of the positions by Leuenberger seems pretty locked down, they're still providing a lot of people with difficulty.
And Dan Curry looking the goods compared to Goldstein week by week.
Let's hope so, mate. If he could become North's number one ruck, then that would definitely change things up a little bit.
All right, Mark. I think we'll call it quits for now. And we'll catch you guys again soon. Cheers.
See ya.